Today is Friday, April 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a historic inter-Korea summit is now officially underway. He was once called America's dad. Well, Thursday, he was convicted of sexual assault.
Women were finally believed, and we thank the jury so much for that.
The president's nominee now confirmed to be the new U.S. Secretary of State. Also ahead, Macy's unveils a Muslim clothing line. It's all on today's International Edition. With a single step over a weathered, cracked slab of concrete, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un made history Friday by crossing over the world's most heavily armed border to greet his rival, South Korean President Moon Jae-in, for talks on North Korea's nuclear weapons and more. It's the first time one of the ruling Kim leaders has crossed over to the southern side of the demilitarized zone since the Korean War ended in 1953. Beyond the surface, however, it's still not clear whether the leaders can make any progress in closed-door talks on North Korea, which has bedeviled U.S. and South Korean officials for decades. Joining us now for more is Asia, VOA Asia correspondent Brian Patton, who is in Seoul at the site of the event.
It's been a very symbolic beginning to this inter-Korean summit. Over a third of South Korean households were, according to a recent Yonhap report, were watching this opening greeting between North Korean Kim Jong-un and the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and South Korean President Moon Jae-in. They met at the military demarcation line in the demilitarized zone, on the line, the border line that separates North and South. They shook hands across the border. They smiled. They chatted. And then Kim took that historic step across the demarcation line into South Korea. It is the first time a North Korean leader from the Communist North has entered, has touched down on soil in Democratic South. So it's a very big day. It's a very historic day. It was a very friendly and jovial first meeting. In fact, the North Korean leader immediately grabbed Moon's hand and invited him to cross back across the demarcation line into the North, and they both smiling, they did so, and then a very formal ceremony and military honor guard review had followed. Then much of what has happened since then has been outside of the view of the press.
Was anyone able to hear any of the conversation between the two?
There are reports that some of the conversations that were going on and that the North Korean leader said words to the effect of, let's not allow the situation to deteriorate further again. Let's not do this again. Let's maintain good relations for the future.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
It is pretty impressive, and he seems to be very outgoing, friendly. I think the South Korean leader is trying to kind of moderate his position because he's trying to not just welcome the North Korean leader with totally with open arms, he's trying to kind of facilitate a further peace deal. So he cannot be looking like he's too accepting of the leader of a very repressive regime in the North.
I guess they'll be talking about nuclear. Do you think they'll be talking about human rights issues and other things as well?
According to what we're hearing from South Korean officials, human rights is not on the agenda. Economic engagement will not likely come out of this. But they are both going to talk specifically about denuclearization, about creating more of a framework for which the North Korean side would agree to a deal to end its nuclear program. But that would be a deal that would come next at the summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and Kim. So this would set up some of that and hopefully answer some of the questions from the Trump administration or signal a more serious intent to the Trump administration that this time the North Korean leadership is prepared to make real reductions and really make progress towards ending its nuclear program rather than just following the same old strategy of creating a crisis by increasing missile and nuclear tests and threatening rhetoric and then easing that tension by agreeing to talk and getting concessions for maintaining that higher level of nuclear capability it achieved in the interim.
What's the mood there in South Korea? What are people thinking? Are they optimistic?
I mean, people here are, like I think everywhere, they're a bit skeptical about the long-term possibilities here, but it's there's optimism. I mean, just about, you know, just months ago, there was talk about increasing possible military strikes and continuous missile and nuclear tests. And there was, at least from the political rhetoric side of things. So, you know, to have this pivot in the last few months towards diplomacy and engagement has been an encouraging sign, I think, for most in Korea who don't want to see, first and foremost, don't want any conflict.
That's Asia correspondent Brian Patton. Well, there have been concerns that if President Trump pulls out of the Iran nuclear deal, it could impact his upcoming talks on North Korea's nuclear program. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis Thursday said he didn't think that it is an issue given the North's track record.
I also recognize that some people point out that this could impact on the North Korea negotiations, but I would say in that case, in light of Kim's family and himself breaking every international treaty, every agreement they've ever made, whether it be with the Republic of Korea or with the United States, I'm less concerned with that ripple effect right now. I think we need to focus on what is in the best interest of Middle East stability and the threat that Iran poses.
But Mattis emphasized that there has been no decision made on any U.S. withdrawal from the 2015 Iran nuclear agreement, but Washington is working with its allies to see if there are ways to improve the pact.
There has been no decision made on any withdrawal from JCPOA. The discussions are ongoing in the National Security Staff and those of us who are charged with that responsibility of giving the president advice. And it's going on today as we speak.
French President Emmanuel Macron, who wrapped up a U.S. visit this week, said he believes President Trump will pull out of the agreement. In a speech Wednesday, though, he urged U.S. lawmakers to ensure the United States doesn't abandon the Iran nuclear deal.
We signed it at the initiative of the United States. We signed it, both the United States and France. That is why we cannot say we should get rid of it like that.
Trump faces a May 12th deadline on whether or not to reimpose some of the economic sanctions that were lifted on Iran in exchange for limits on the country's nuclear development as part of the deal. The president has called the agreement insane and ridiculous. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Parents are suing North Korea over the death of the detainee Otto Warmbier. The Gaza escalation risk is rising, according to the UN. Scrutiny of Trump's lawyer, Cohen, is adding to the president's distractions. And UN peacekeepers uncover suspected mass graves in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Former CIA Director Mike Pompeo was sworn in as U.S. Secretary of State Thursday after a divided Senate voted 57-42 to confirm President Trump's nominee. Trump hailed the confirmation and congratulated Pompeo on becoming the 70th person to be named America's top diplomat. Pompeo replaces Rex Tillerson, who was fired last month by Trump. VOA's David Byrd talks about Pompeo's style with VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain.
Mike Pompeo is more hawkish. He's not afraid to be more belligerent when he relates to other countries. How do you think that will affect negotiations with the Chinese, the North Koreans, people in Southeast Asia?
Well, that's a very good question. And some Democrats in the Senate had expressed concern about that very thing. Some had voted for him to be the CIA director, but they said on the question of being the chief U.S. diplomat, then that person needs to use, of course, diplomacy as the main tool and military force as a last resort. And some of the statements he has made in the past, even suggesting he might support regime change in North Korea and saying that the same thing about Iran, have some, especially Democrats, very nervous.
You mentioned Iran. President Trump faces a decision next month on whether to stay in or back out of what's called the Joint Plan of Action, I believe, the Iran nuclear deal. And that could affect a proposed summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un if the United States backs out, right?
Yes, you're right. It certainly could, because you know, one would think that Kim Jong-un would say, okay, if the U.S. is not going to stick to its promises, you know, one president signs a deal and then the next president comes along and pulls out of it, then how what is it really worth? So that is a concern also for a lot of people. Of course, Pompeo, in trying to reassure senators, said that, you know, they are trying to fix the deal. So it's not quite clear whether, now that he is in a new role, whether he will try diplomacy first. But he has hit the ground running and is headed off to a NATO foreign minister's in Brussels and then to the Middle East just hours after being sworn in at the Supreme Court.
That's VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain. U.S. comedian Bill Cosby, best known as the lovable American or America's lovable dad, he portrayed on 1980s television hit The Cosby Show, was convicted Thursday of drugging and molesting a one-time friend in 2004. A Pennsylvania jury convicted the 80-year-old Cosby of an attack on Andrea Constand, now 45 years old. While the trial focused on Constand, about 50 other women have accused Cosby of similar violations, including Lily Bernard, who spoke after the verdict.
Today, this jury has shown that what the Me Too movement has saying is that women are worthy of being believed.
But Cosby's attorney, Bill Messereau, vowed to fight on appeal.
We are very disappointed by the verdict. We don't think Mr. Cosby's guilty of anything, and the fight is not over.
Well, joining us now for more on the ruling is Los Angeles-based criminal defense attorney, Jonathan Mandel. Tell us exactly about this ruling.
They found him guilty of sexual assault on three different counts.
What were those counts?
Penetration with lack of consent, penetration while unconscious, and penetration after administering an intoxicant. They're all variations on the same theme.
How serious is this, and what kind of a punishment will he likely receive, or sentence will he likely receive?
Each count carries 10 years because they're serious felonies. So collectively, obviously, you're looking at 30 years. However, they can be run concurrently. That's up to the judge. And that may be one of the big issues in terms of the sentencing. That will be the big issue.
Why is that?
Well, he has a right to an appeal, whether the underlying elements are met, whether the jury made the right decision and the judge instructed them correctly, and particularly if the judge allowed the evidence of the other women's suffering in. That's certainly subject to appeal. But even if he loses his appeal, he certainly has the right to ask the court to mitigate its sentencing.
This trial was actually only one of his accusers, correct?
Right. There was many accusers. Four others, I think five others, testified as to what would have been criminal behavior. But this trial, the only decision the jury made is in Miss Constant, I believe her name is Constant, whether she was the victim. The other victims came in, discussed similar misbehaviors, and on that the jury could find that a pattern of misbehavior that then benefited Miss Constant's statements or allegations. There was only one actual victim here whose case was being heard.
I thought this was already an appeal.
No. This case, the original trial resulted in there was a hung jury. 2 not guilty against 10.
Okay.
That was never fully explored, but no, it was what we call a mistrial.
Okay, so then he will likely appeal.
Oh, he has to. I mean, everybody in any serious offense will appeal on any conviction. Whether or not they have the resources, he does. But even if he didn't have the resources, if he were tapped out, the state would, at its own expense, hire an appellate attorney, given the nature and the seriousness of this, to pursue the appeal.
And will he have to serve time while he's appealing, or will he be able to stay out of prison?
Well, the court thus far today allowed him to stay out. Usually, someone who's convicted of a felony is immediately taken into custody. However, the court does have discretion, and specifically with him, it's the same issue as bail, which is the discretion is based not so much on punishment, but is this person a risk to flee, and is he a risk to do harm to others? And given his notoriety and his age, it's doubtful that the court found him to be a threat to do either. And if I may add one other thing, they also required him to wear a GPS. And so that device, given his notoriety and his lack of threat, probably the value of that GPS is to monitor him going from his bedroom to his bathroom, because it really probably is unnecessary, but they did put it in as an assurance that he would follow terms while he was out.
All right, that's Los Angeles-based criminal defense attorney Jonathan Mandel. And in an entirely different court case, a federal judge ordered the Trump administration this week to keep the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, known as DACA, in place and to accept new applicants. Last week, Trump set a March 5th expiration date for the program that has provided temporary work and study permits to 700,000 immigrants brought to the U.S. illegally as children, and they're sometimes referred to as dreamers. Joining us now for more on what this all means is immigration attorney Catherine Ferrigno. Can you explain to us exactly what this court ruled?
Basically, they felt that the prior ruling of President Trump unwinding DACA, that they found it arbitrary and capricious, and so they basically want more reasoning as to why this program is being ended. And so they are giving 90 days for more of a reason behind that decision. If there is not a decision that's satisfactory within 90 days, then DACA will be fully reinstated.
What's the government's argument?
Well, they basically feel that DACA is unconstitutional, and that there were a fear of lawsuits. And basically, the judge in D.C. has said that that's just not good enough of a reason, that they want more. And the reason that this decision yesterday was so important was that this now will allow new DACA applicants to be able to apply for this benefit in 90 days, assuming that this order does go into effect. The two prior court decisions that happened over the past couple of months, they allowed prior recipients of DACA, anyone who had received it in the past or currently had it, were able to renew that benefit, but no new applicants were able to come forward. So this decision, if it goes in effect in the 90 days, it's going to allow those new DACA applicants to now come forward and apply.
It's interesting because we heard President Trump basically putting the blame on Congress and Democrats in particular for these so-called dreamers. But what I'm hearing, obviously, is that the government is making the argument for looking to do away with the program. So obviously it was their decision.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of placing the blame on others and kind of going around in circle.
So where does it go from here? They have 90 days to do what?
Basically, 90 days to come up with a good justification as to why this program is ending. If that reasoning is not satisfactory, then this decision will go into effect.
Will that be the end of it, or likely go end up in the Supreme Court?
Well, the Supreme Court did recently say that they are not going to fast-track this issue. So if it even does wind up at the Supreme Court, which I could see it getting there, given all the confusion over DACA, it doesn't seem like we're going to be able to skip any steps. We will still have to go through the appeals process to get properly up to the Supreme Court, and from there, give it the time that it's going to take for oral arguments and everything. So with the Supreme Court already saying we're not going to fast-track this, it will play out for some time. If I had to take a guess, my guess would be that in 90 days, this decision is going to go into effect.
All right. Thank you for your perspective, immigration attorney Catherine Ferrigno. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. The freedom to wear whatever you want is taken for granted here in the U.S., but some people's idea of fashion options is being viewed by others as condoning the repression of women. In her first television interview, a U.S. designer of Muslim clothing explains why she designed the line. VOA's Carolyn Prasuti has the story.
Lisa Vogel is more than just a few clicks away from her German Catholic roots in central Michigan.
Tell me if I poke you.
Okay. I think I only had like two Muslims that I know of that I grew up with in my school.
Vogel developed an interest in the Islamic faith through a photography project. She later converted and started designing the clothing she couldn't find in stores.
They don't cater to the religious requirements of a hijabi Muslim.
Vogel started the Verona Collection, a modest clothing line that features hijabs in what fashion bloggers describe as colors that pop.
Half of the May production is actually going to be shot this Friday.
She opened a retail store in Florida, but converted it to a warehouse after a major department store took notice. Macy's, yes, one of America's largest, oldest department stores, is carrying Verona on its website.
There's now women that look like me, or dress like me, I should say, being represented on Macy's.
Not everyone agrees with this arrangement. Some point to the women of Syria who burned their hijabs after the defeat of the Islamic State, or the Iranian woman who was jailed after removing hers in public.
Some tweets have demanded a boycott, one suggesting that Macy's is supporting the oppression of women.
I do want to try it on.
Sure.
Rather than backing down from the controversy, Vogel says she's offering Muslim women a choice.
What's happening overseas has nothing to do with me. It absolutely doesn't. I'm here just offering clothing options.
It's an option that could help Macy's, which closed 100 of its stores in the past 2 years. Globally, consumers spend about $250 billion on Muslim attire. But it's a sensitive topic for women who grew up in Iran, including women's rights activist Parvaneh Hosseini.
It is ignorant towards what hijab means in other parts of the world.
Hosseini says the store should take a stance against the enforcement of hijab. Despite repeated attempts, Macy's declined to speak with VOA. Vogel says she has no intention of dropping her clothing line to concede to critics. Instead, she's focused on making Verona a regular staple at more department stores. Carolyn Prasuti, VOA News, Orlando, Florida.
Well, Kanye West is known for many talents. He's a rapper, singer, songwriter, producer, fashion designer, and entrepreneur. And amid all of his exploits, he's also going solo, as Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald tells VOA's Jim Stevenson.
I just want to take you out and show you off. You already know that you're the perfect one. Girl, when I'm with you, feel like a champion. Ever since I got with you, I feel like I done won me a trophy.
The news about Kanye is always just that little bit more fascinating than anyone else, because he is such an interesting character. You may know that he suffered a nervous breakdown in late 2016, and he was very much out of the limelight for much of last year. But he's back with us these days. Now, he's lately drawn fire for supporting U.S. President Donald Trump. But
yes.
What I find most interesting are Kanye's recent business moves. He has parted ways with both his managers. Last month, he left Izzy Zivkovich, and he just parted ways with Scooter Braun. Now, Scooter is the super manager who also works with Ariana Grande and Justin Bieber. Kanye reportedly wanted Scooter just to work with him. Scooter said, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Well, on Wednesday, Kanye sounded off on Twitter saying, I no longer have a manager. I can't be managed.
That's an understatement.
He went on to say that he's nobody's client and that he wants to take all of his business in-house. And that's really following in the footsteps of some other major artists like Beyonce, who are also handling their own business these days. Kanye tweeted that he wanted to fill 160 positions by the end of the year, and that his Yeezy apparel line will hit $1 billion in 2018. Kanye went on to say that he's now the highest paid person in footwear, and he intends to take the Yeezy brand beyond clothing and shoes and to bring the prices down a bit. So he has big business plans. As far as music goes, Kanye is still signed to a deal with Def Jam Records, along with a publishing deal at Sony ATV. He says we can expect two albums from him in June. He'll be out on June 1st with a solo album containing 7 songs. And then on June 8th, he'll drop a collaboration with fellow rapper Kid Cudi. He says their group will be called Kids See Ghost. And he has some other artists that he's going to be bringing out on his Good Music label. It's unknown whether Kanye West will sever his relationship with Def Jam and Sony ATV. But I'm sure if something happens, we will be the first to know about it, because he's not shy about letting his intentions be known.
Well, that's good news for Kanye West fans. Some new music to look forward to. And, you know, of course, who would know Kanye West better than Kanye West? Why not manage himself?
Yeah, exactly. Like he says, you know, nobody else can. That might include his wife, Kim Kardashian.
Probably. Well, we'll have to ask Kim a little bit later what she thinks of all that. But it sounds like things are going well for Kanye West. And one thing that we know for sure is Ray McDonald manages the Top 20 Countdown each and every week. You'll want to check that out on VOA 1. Thanks so much, Ray.
Thank you, Jim.
I will cry, and when you smile, I will smile. And next time when I look in your eyes, we'll have wings and we'll fly. No, my only one, just like the morning sun. You'll keep on rising till the sky knows your name, and you're still my chosen one.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Glenn Hollis. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Intellectual property is a term that refers to unique creations of the human mind that are subsequently recognized and protected by law, such as inventions, literary and artistic works, as well as symbols, names, images, and designs used in commerce. It includes musical performances, films, fashion, advances in technology or medicine, and innovations on existing design in every field and genre. Simply put, intellectual property represents our genius. Stealing intellectual property is no less of a crime than stealing someone's wallet or damaging their sale goods. Some consequences of intellectual property theft are obvious. If a patient is treated with counterfeit medication, his or her health could suffer, or they could die. Intellectual property theft deprives artists, inventors, and innovators of their just compensation and cheats purchasers of pirated goods because the value of the purchase is less than advertised. Some of the lesser-known forms of intellectual property theft include appropriation of trade secrets and specialized know-how, usually through cyber theft, and compulsory transfer of technology from transnational companies to the government of a country on whose territory they wish to conduct business. Still, one of the most serious consequences of intellectual property theft is that it stifles creativity and innovation. Why dedicate effort and resources to creation or innovation if one is not likely to reap commensurate rewards? On April 26th, we observe World Intellectual Property Day to celebrate creativity, to acknowledge the contributions of creators, inventors, and innovators to the development of societies across the globe, and to raise awareness of how patents, copyright, and trademarks contribute to humanity's progress. This year's theme, Women in Innovation and Creativity, is designed to celebrate women's contributions to intellectual property. The protection and enforcement of intellectual property rights help ensure the world will continue to benefit from the time, resources, and brain power invested in developing new technologies and improvement of existing ones, from the works of some of our most creative citizens, and from new brands and modes of production. On this day, as we celebrate the human capacity to create, innovate, and invent, we call on all our friends and partners to stiffen intellectual property laws where needed and enforce them strictly for the sake of us all.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.